Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this May 16th, Tuesday takeover edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next probably 30, 35 minutes or so as we chat with Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. We're going to talk about a grab bag of different things here. We'll chat NBA playoffs, Major League Baseball, and then also some of the college football and NFL stuff that has been posted out there in Las Vegas, and then also some of these numbers available at the offshores. A couple quick things before we bring Ralph on the air. First, remember all the great content going on over at bangthebook.com. My picks analysis piece goes up every day. Also a daily fantasy piece. I've got the AT&T Byron Nelson preview up. Also my daily fantasy for this week's golf stuff. And then the other thing is, of course, keep in mind those contests that we have going on over there. Cash prizes, no purchase necessary for the daily streaker contest, monthly pick of the day. Then also some prizes for the top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won. So those three great contests over there at the website. And then this show and all Bang the Book Radio shows presented by DSI Sportsbook. Use that promo code BTB Radio. Good for a $10 free bet just for signing up. An additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. Without further ado, let's bring on this week's Tuesday Takeover guest. That is the great Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Ralph, how's it going today, buddy?
It is a great day out here, Adam. It's actually chilly out here in Vegas. It's only going to be about 80 today, so I'm going to struggle through today. Look forward to a great NBA game 2 tonight, and then, of course, looking forward to the Cavs opening game against Boston. It seems like it's been a few weeks since I've seen my hometown Cavs play.
Well, you're going to be begging for 80 degrees when it's 115 about 2 months from now, so bottle that one up and enjoy it while you can. You mentioned the NBA playoffs. I think that's a good starting point because we, as you said, finally know who the Cavs are going to play. They'll wind up playing the Celtics, which means they start on the road Wednesday night. We'll get into that in a second here, but before we do that, let's look at this game, too, in the Spurs and Warriors series. Kawhi Leonard not playing tonight for San Antonio, and the wheels just completely fell off for them on Sunday once he went out of the game. What are you expecting here for tonight's action with Golden State laying 2 touchdowns?
You know, one thing I want to point out is I think we saw the difference right there of being prepared to play a game without your leading player, like San Antonio did when they crushed Houston, and then compare that to losing your player in the midst of a game when you have a lead and losing your go-to guy that game. We saw San Antonio fall apart. You know, I think this line would be a point, maybe 2 points higher had San Antonio not demolished Houston without Kawhi Leonard in that incredible performance. So right now, I think there's value on Golden State. I'm not one to lay 14 to a Popovich team, but the way that injury occurred with them being up that much, the devastating loss, now having to rebound, there was questions if he was going to play or not. Golden State obviously started as slow as they ever have in that first quarter shooting the ball. And I think now, because of what San Antonio did, I think this line is actually, there's value with Golden State with that injury, and I think you're going to see them shoot their normal, you know, high 40% and including 40-plus from three-point range tonight.
So how would you approach this game then tonight, Ralph? I mean, as you said, you're not really in the business of laying 14 points in the NBA playoffs, and there aren't a whole lot of people that are going to be eager to do that. I imagine the public play will probably still end up being Golden State here just because, you know, everyone saw what happened to the Spurs as they collapsed there in game one. Do you look for a live betting opportunity then instead?
You know, the funny thing is, even the lives didn't work out in the first game because Golden State got back down this far. You know, live is always the way to go. But in this case, I'm not a big advocate of a teaser, but I know people like playing these championship games. You know, this is the Western Conference Championship. It's the one game they're going to watch it. You know, my best bet in this play would be a Golden State over teaser, you know, looking to lay 9.5 with Golden State, you're under that double-digit mark, and then you're going to be down to playing only over 205. You certainly know Golden State's going to try to press that tempo without the best defender or the second-best defender, if you like Draymond Green, in the NBA, not on the court. So I would look at a two-team teaser with Golden State and the over in this one this evening.
What do you think about the rest of the series here? I mean, obviously, it's sort of contingent on Kawhi Leonard and if he's able to play Game 3 and beyond. The fact that the Spurs collapsed there in Game 1, I mean, they were probably going to lose this series anyway, and certainly the odds suggested that. How long do you think this thing actually goes?
I'm going to give San Antonio one win. I might have given him two. You know, had they won that first game, you never know what would have happened. It might have gone to a Game 7. I think San Antonio certainly can regroup. I think that Game 3, if Kawhi is going to play, or Game 4 when he does, you know, the one game when he's back and healthy, I'll give him that. But right now, because of that injury, because of the momentum change, you know, late in that game and the way the series has turned, I'm going to look for a five-game series at this point.
All right, let's go to the Eastern Conference Finals here, which, as I said, will start on Wednesday night in Boston at TD Garden because the Celtics did win the regular season in the Eastern Conference over the Cavaliers. But, Rolf, I mean, you watch the Cavaliers here in the playoffs, and it is very clear that they are a much, much different team. LeBron James has this team on his back. He says, follow me. And so far, they've followed him to a perfect 8-0 record. Very quick turnaround here for Boston, winning Game 7 at home over the Wizards on Monday night. How do you feel about that type of scenario where you've got a Boston team that's been playing, you've got a Cavs team that hasn't been playing? Does that give Boston any sort of edge here in Game 1, or do you feel it's just going to be status quo for the Cavs?
Well, you know, a couple notes. Number one, you had the long layoff for the Cavs, and the long layoff never affected me as a Cavs fan or a Cavs backer. The one thing that is different in this layoff is during the previous layoffs, they were able to practice, live practice. You being in Cleveland obviously know they lost one of their bigs with a broken hand this past week, so they weren't able to scrimmage. That concerns me a bit. Not that they're going to win the series, but just the way they come out and play, because they always talked about how they are a much better team when they get practice time. They didn't get that that live practice time, so that's a bit of a concern. Now, the other thing is you have an emotional Boston team. If you watch those games, kudos to those fans. I mean, they were let's go Celtics from tip-off to final basket. So hats off to the Celtics fans. And Cleveland's Cleveland. I am not going to bet against Cleveland in this series. You know, they're laying 3.5. They're 5-1 to win the series. They're minus 500. And again, I am not going to play against Cleveland, who, number one, has taken 3 out of 4. They demolished them with a portion of the team they had the last time they played. You know, you have the Love and the Olenecki scenario going back 2 years ago when Love was injured in that Boston series. So, you know, you've got Isaiah. Isaiah's going to score his points because Kyrie still plays Kyrie defense. You know, the one thing I take about this game early is Cleveland's hungry. Cleveland's ready to go. Cleveland is playing on 9 days rest. Boston's playing on 2. I think Cleveland certainly tries to press this tempo. You know, I looked at the lines, and it is a pretty decent number. I think 218.5, 219 for the game. But the one thing I like coming out is Boston has the momentum from the win. Cleveland's going to press the tempo, not having played. I like the over in the first half. It's 109.5 or 109. And I think you're going to see a very high scoring first half.
So the Celtics have played 13 games here in the playoffs. The Cavaliers, I mentioned, a perfect 8-0 record here. How deep do you think this one goes? And if it does go deeper, you know, does the fact that the Cavs haven't really played a whole lot of basketball over the last month come into play for you at all?
No, because Golden State's played exactly the same amount, you know, and that's what we're looking for. You know, the one interesting thing, this means nothing at all, you know, until we get back to Cleveland. The Cavs have – this has to be an NBA record. The Cavs are going to be 14 days between home games. Having been the higher seed in the second round, they played games 1 and 2, swept games 3 and 4. Now they're the lower seed, and they'll play games 3 and 4 at home. So it'll be 14 days between games at the Q for you Cleveland hometown fans, which is a remarkable, you know, you don't even go the regular season without playing 14 games between home games. So that's something that sticks out to me. I think the Cavs are more likely to sweep now that the series starts at Boston. Teams sometimes lose focus when you're playing those games 3 and 4. You're mentally tired. You've played the same opponent. Now you have to go travel to their site. You see the enthusiastic fans that are there. But with this being turned around, you're going to get the Cavs full focus the first two games. And then when they're home game 3 and 4, LeBron and company are not going to lose a home game to Boston in this series. So I think starts in Boston, the series goes 4.
One other thing I want to ask you about here with the NBA playoffs, and then we'll move on to some of the different sports we're going to talk about. The over has done very well in the NBA playoffs here so far this year. And we've also seen a lot of blowouts. We've seen some games that just weren't very competitive. We saw some games that got away late. Of course, in that Washington-Boston series, we started to get some closer games as we got late into that series, a one-point game in Game 6, and then a 10-point game there in Game 7 that we can kind of debate the merits of how close that game actually was. So, you know, in terms of what we've seen so far here in the NBA playoffs, does this plant any seeds for you in future NBA postseasons, or do you just sort of look at all of them as an individual series of events and not really carry anything over to the following year?
Well, yes and no. You know, right now I think you have these few super teams, and what happens is when you have those superstars, you have very little depth on your bench for the rest of the league. So you have Boston and Washington going at it, and while their stars may score on the road, you don't see the bench coming up with the production that they get at home. The lesser players, the non-superstars, feed off that home energy. So that's why I think the home teams are doing so well. You know, when you get to the Cavs and Golden State, you know, the home edge is much less. We saw Washington lay 5 and then Boston lay 5. So we were laying a 5-point home edge in the playoffs. And I think that shows you how much the home edge has become a factor because of, number one, the crowd. But I think it's more of the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 players need the home energy to have those super games. You know, Olenecki never would have done that on the road. I bet he's never done that on the road his entire life, what he did in the fourth quarter last night. So, you know, those kind of performances, there's very few people that had a winning record, you know, a winning road record in the NBA last year. And even the Cavs, we're talking about maybe the third best team in basketball. The Cavs had a 20-21 road record in the regular season. So it's just that home court is magnified in the playoffs. The pressure gets ramped up for the non-superstars, and very few people can step up and play in that role.
Well, we're about a month and a half into the grind here of the Major League Baseball regular season. We go all the way through September and actually into October with that. And then, of course, we got the playoffs, and then World Series will end in November again this year. So the Major League Baseball grind, how's it treating you so far, Rolf?
You know, it's only my second year doing baseball. You know, when I was in Cleveland and working for North Coast Sports and Phil Steele Publications, you know, the effort at this point was always towards the magazine and working on football. So this is only my second year in baseball. I take it very slow. I limit the amount of plays I have, but I'm learning a lot. There's a lot of great people to talk to. You know, it's not like I haven't bet baseball my entire life. But when you're doing it full-time as a business, it is different the way you have to treat it and the way you have to handicap it. You know, and your listeners are very intelligent, but for maybe there's some new gamblers up there that now that the NBA playoffs are starting to whittle down, they're going to look and play some baseball. I want to tell you how deceptive records are in baseball. You know, you've got to look at those dogs, and you got to look to play against teams. You know, the Indians and the Cubs, of course, were the two best teams in baseball last year. And they basically came into the year, you know, the Cubs were number one, the Indians were in the top two or three, in pretty much everyone's consensus. And you have to look at the season in increments. I pulled out the last 20 games right now. So the season, you know, we're in a couple weeks. 20 games takes me back to about April 23rd. I'm going to get rid of the first 3 weeks of the season. Teams are adjusting. You're not figuring out how to play. Well, in the last 20 games, the Cubs are 8-12. They're minus 7.3 units if you're backing the Cubs. Now you think, well, they're going to bounce back. Well, sure, they're going to bounce back. But don't look at a team from last year's record. Don't look at a year-to-date record. Look at increments. Over that same last 20-game period since April the 23rd. Both the Indians and the White Sox are 10-10. When you're betting football or when you're betting basketball, you say, well, they're both down one unit. Not even the case. Cleveland Indians are down 4.7 units. And, excuse me, the Chicago White Sox, 3 units. That means in the same period of time, with two teams being both 10-10, it's a seven unit difference between those teams. So what that is teaching me is I look to play against teams. I don't look to play on a team as much as I try to look at a team that's overvalued because they haven't been playing as well recently, be it either hitting or pitching. And I look to play against them because, as in football, as in basketball, most people prefer playing those favorites. So when you get those dogs, you get value. You know, one example are totals. People, you know, over-unders in the NFL get advertised. They get on streaks. People like playing on those teams that can score. But over that same 20-game period, again, going back to April 23rd, the Mets are 15-2-2 to the over. Can you imagine a team making a 15-2 run in the NBA? Yeah, well, in the NBA it happens, but in the NFL, you know, almost going the whole season without a loss, 15-2-2. St. Louis is 14-4, and the A's and Brewers are 14-6 to the over. Another thing it taught me when I'm looking into these baseball numbers are there's as much or more value on these totals as there are on the side. So I continue to learn. You know, the Indians are a team that, you know, we're 5-15 to the over. Their offense has been inept. Their pitching has still been solid, but you have to learn to make adjustments. You and I talked about this off the air. They changed their lineup this past Sunday. They're a prideful team with a lot of good hitters. Sometimes a little tweak like that can make adjustments. So you're always taking a certain period of games, the last 10 games or the last 20 games. Forget about what you think about the team. Look at how that team has performed and handicap off that current performance and not your expectations.
You know, and I think something that's really interesting about what you just said in terms of looking at the season in increments is that, you know, 20 games in the NBA or in the NHL is basically 25% of the season. That's clearly not the case here when you talk about Major League Baseball with 162 games. So do you find that, you know, doing some research there in terms of increments is really helpful to you because the odds makers aren't going to be as aggressive to move things because it is a smaller percentage of the sample size?
Well, and the odds makers are posting out their number. You know, they're posting out their number, but we still see people betting the Cubs and the Indians because that's who people remember were the best teams. We saw them in an epic World Series. We know they have superstars. They get those first highlights on ESPN, and teams, you tend to play those teams. So, again, Vegas is putting out a number where they think they're going to get equal money, but we see a lot of movement in baseball. So, you know, it happens. You know, one thing I want to talk about in baseball as well, this is the play for Wednesday for any of you that are listening early. When I'm looking at pitchers, one thing I learned as well is it's easy to find a pitcher's last three starts. Excuse me, you go to most places and you find their last three starts, but I'm also learning that's not enough to learn about this pitcher. There's a pitcher tonight, and he's probably going to be on my card, Andrew Teagues for the A's. Teagues is 5-2 with a 2.21 ERA. You look at those numbers and you think they're fantastic. His last three starts, L.A., 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run. Detroit, 5 1/3 innings, 8 hits, 3 runs. And then he went to Houston, pitched 7 shutout innings. So I'm thinking he's a very good pitcher. When I go back and look at the rest of his starts this year, he has 8 starts. This is his 8th start. He pitched against this same team, Seattle, back on April the 23rd. In that game against Seattle, he gave up 6 earned runs in 4 innings. So that means Teagues, besides that earlier Seattle performance, has pitched 36 innings and given up 4 earned runs. That's a pretty tidy 1.0 ERA. I've got a pitcher now who's pitching well and has motivation facing the same team for a second time in the only game that he got shelled all year, and he's only a 110 favorite. So you know, that's something that I'll look at tonight. I'm sure Oakland will be on my card. Andrew Teagues, that's for those Wednesday callers. So another thing I learned is when you're looking at pitchers, it's a long season. Pitchers get more motivated to face certain opponents for certain reasons. Try to keep track of what those are and use them to your advantage.
All right, Ralph, I want to follow up here with Major League Baseball, and then we'll move on to football. And I want to ask you about this, and this is something I've kind of talked about with other guests in the past with regards to baseball. It's a very fluid market. You know, when you talk about the NFL or college football, something like that, you release a play at 6.5. It's probably still going to be there. Maybe it goes down to 6, something like that. But in baseball, we tend to get some pretty significant moves. We'll see on a daily basis 25 to 30-cent moves here because it's a money line sport. And you know, they just probably tend to be a little bit more aggressive in terms of moving money line prices as opposed to the spreads and things of that sort. So from a selling standpoint, and I know that you said this is, you're only your second year doing baseball. What kind of challenges have you found with that in terms of, you know, releasing plays at the right time? Do you give a range to your clients of I would play it, you know, up to this price or down to this price? How do you handle that?
Well, I cut some of the negative factors out by releasing my plays at noon Eastern. You know, at that point, you've had the overnight line. People have been into it. You had the first people hit it in the morning, and you have less movement coming from noon Eastern until 7 o'clock when the start time is or earlier. So I really don't run into that problem. You know, baseball, unlike other sports, all you're doing is picking the winner. So I feel more comfortable perhaps laying 10 cents or 20 cents more than a line move in football, because with a line move, it can affect your team winning or not. A money move or a dollar move is not going to affect if your client won. It's only going to hurt if you lost. So it's only going to affect you 50% of the time. And for those people that lost an extra $10 or $20 on a line move, I can live with that. They're not losing a game because of it. They're just losing an extra 10 cents, you know, on the money. So I don't worry about it much. You know, my customers always have the ability to reach me if they have a question. If they have a local guy and his line moves too much, believe it or not, Adam, there's still some people that use local lines, although we know how many great options there are, including the site you promote. So, again, shop around in baseball. While it doesn't change if you win or lose, it sure helps if you lose 10 or 20 less cents on each bet you make, a big difference when you get to the end of the year.
All right, so I don't remember offhand exactly what your timeline was last year. I know you relocated out to Vegas and you were able to immerse yourself in a lot of you know, easier betting opportunities, both with the apps and then with the brick and mortars. But in terms of college football and the NFL here, is this the first time that you've been able to have access to those early season win total numbers in Las Vegas?
No, I was out here last year for the start of the win totals. I just wasn't privy to the information when they were coming out. I didn't have the right avenues. Believe it or not, they're not well publicized. You know, South Point's going through their learning curves and doing things. The South Point was the first to open up a lot of games in the win totals last year, and they sort of just sent out a tweet the day before and said, okay, we're going to open these up. The Golden Nugget's a little different. The Golden Nugget goes by their history of releasing their college football game of the year lines and their win totals, and their data set, and people line up for that. So while I was out here, I was not able to take advantage, but I was out here. This year's a little different. You know, people have opened up some numbers already. Golden Nugget opened up some numbers, and as did the South Point. But talking to Chris Andrews, who's the sportsbook director at the South Point, he'll be opening up all his win totals and some game of the year numbers either the last week in May or the first week in June. That's delayed by a couple weeks. Talking to him at the Kentucky Derby party, the reason being, for those that aren't familiar, Brett Musburger relocated out here in Vegas, and they started a national radio station called VSIN, Vegas Sports and Information Network. And Chris Andrews has two or three segments on that daily. It's taken up a lot of his time. So while that has happened, I'm thinking perhaps there are a few weaker numbers this time with people more interested in being on the radio than putting up sharp lines. We'll have to wait to see what happens there.
Well, of course, Westgate released NFL win totals. We'll get to those in a second. But in terms of the college football stuff here, Ralph, I mean, like I said, you know, I've been talking about this with other handicappers. The timeline is just is so accelerated now with all these numbers coming out here in late May. The added benefit for you is that with your background through North Coast and also Phil Steele Publications, you're used to being in college football mode. That's something that you were just ready to do here at this time of the year. I know you've got the MLB learning curve going on. I know you've got clients that are interested in baseball stuff, but do you feel like you should have a little bit of an edge here with college football since you've had this mindset of being ready early on?
Oh boy, there's no question. It's ready, raring to go. If the season started tomorrow, I can guarantee you I'd be ready for the season. So, you know, I'm very excited. I go through and I do a preview guide, and it'll, you know, it won't come out till June when people start getting excited, you know, the end of June or the beginning of July, just to get the popularity hits. But there's a lot of things, you know, I've done already. And, you know, we're looking at, you know, not only returning starters, you know, returning starters, you know, I didn't want to touch on that. People get enamored with returning starters. And, you know, the one thing I learned is that returning starters are only relevant if you compare them to what the team has had historically. You know, you got to remember that some teams send a lot of people to the draft. Let's talk Alabama. If you said they only have 11 returning starters, that would be one of the lowest in all of college football for any team of the 130 teams this year. But if you look at Bama over the past course of 4 years, they had 11 starters this past year. They lost to Clemson in the national championship. They had 10 starters in 2015. They won the national championship. They had 12 starters in 13, and they had 11 starters in 2013. So you're looking at a team that normally has 10 to 12 starters back. So when you're doing your comparisons for this year, look at what a team has had back the last few years. Look at how a team prepares with that many starters, and then start doing your comparisons for this year. You know, another prime team, you know, the Ohio State Buckeyes. The entire talk of last spring and summer was that the Ohio State Buckeyes only returned 6 starters, 3 on offense, 3 on defense. How can they do anything? They lost to Clemson pretty handily, but I'll tell you what, they still made it to the college football playoff with 6 returning starters. Now you have a team that has 4 times that number of returning starters, so you have to put that in perspective. Other times, teams may have 18 starters back 1 year and do poorly. The next year have 16 back. Comparisons have to be made individually, team by team, and don't look at the returning starters as a whole. Rank them from top to bottom and think a team is going to be that much better because they have that many returning starters.
So with some of the win total numbers that are out there, has anything stood out to you thus far?
In college football?
Yeah.
In college football, some of the week one games have come out. You know, I saw Brad Powers did a tweet that one casino opened up like 5 or 6 numbers. I have not seen those numbers yet. So as far as college football goes, as far as the win totals go, I have not seen them. I did, you know, for your listeners, if you're interested, up at wagertalk.com, I did a breakdown of college football over-under totals. And we forget how teams did, or we forget how teams' expectations have been. But I have the last 5 years, what the Vegas number was for win totals, what their record was, and if they went over or under. And remember, win totals don't include conference championships or bowl games, so you have to go back and look at what their regular season record was. But in the last 5 years, Western Kentucky is the only team that has gone over the Vegas total each of the 5 years. Vegas adjusts to win totals. When you have a team that exceeds expectations, is a big Vegas betting favorite, you can assure yourself they're going to have an inflated over-under number the next year. Only 9 teams have gone over each of the last 3 years. Again, just proving the point. Ohio State is actually 4-0-1, means in the last 5 years they've gone over the Vegas total four times, under zero and pushed once. The only other teams that have gone over each of the last 3 years, Air Force, Bama, California, surprising, Clemson, Memphis, Old Dominion, San Diego State, and Utah. So look at what a team has done recently. Look at what their expectations are. You can just download that sheet I have. It has every team each of the last 5 years. And look where there's value because a team underachieved instead of betting on a team that overachieved.
I guess a better question then would have been to ask you instead, are there any teams that, you know, you're really looking to play on a number here? I mean, obviously you don't know what all the numbers are for these teams, but are there some teams that you feel like could make some significant strides forward this season?
Well, there's a couple things I look at. You know, I do a schedule breakdown, and obviously the schedule is the most important thing. You know, you have to have your power rating numbers, then you look how they play out in your schedule and who your non-conference games are. You know, I'm always surprised at where Vegas puts their numbers, so I'm afraid to put out a team, you know, without saying where they're going to be. But I'll tell you, I like looking at yards per play if a team over or underachieved. I like looking at yards per game. Sometimes a team has trouble scoring, but they move the ball. I expect those teams to normally play better. And in conference action, especially look at yards per game. It's a much truer test. I can tell you one thing I do is every year I break down the roster on how many freshmen, sophomore, juniors, and seniors started. And a clear up sign are teams that played and started underclassmen over 40% of the time. That means they had a very young team. They had a lot of young kids playing, mostly because of new coaches. Or a turnover, you know, with the staff. But Wyoming, Texas, and ULM, as well as Syracuse, had over 50% of their starts made by underclassmen. Wyoming was 56.2. Texas was 54.4. ULM is 54.0. And Syracuse is 53.4. Those are the teams that jump out at me as saying, I'm going to look at them. Now, I can tell you Texas is going to be overrated. You're going to be laying the price with Texas with the Herman Pub. But let me also say this to you. Texas, over the last 5 years, 5 unders, 0 overs compared to the Vegas over-under win total. So 5 straight years, they've underperformed. One other team just to shoot out there that you wouldn't have think this, Boise State, in the last 5 years, 0 overs, 4 unders, 1 push. A team that you still think is doing well, a team that is had to live up to all that hype. Again, a team that people love betting on. Vegas keeps cashing because most people bet the overs. But Boise 0-4-1, Texas and Purdue last year, the other two teams that went 0-5. So teams that played a lot of seniors, I look to fade. Teams that played a lot of underclassmen, I look to go up. That's my first telling sign, regardless of how many starters they have back.
Wyoming's going to be a really interesting team this year because Josh Allen's getting so much NFL draft pub already to possibly be the first quarterback off the board. And you wouldn't think that about a quarterback from Wyoming, but that is one of the things I've noticed here, you know, since we've put the 2016 NFL draft in the rearview mirror. One other team I want to ask you about here, it sort of falls in line with what you're talking about in terms of underclassmen. I don't know if you have that information in front of you or not, but where did South Carolina rank? Because I know they were very, very young too.
South Carolina, 14.3% of their starts were made by freshmen. 39.9% were made by underclassmen. So 40% of their starts were underclassmen. Now, I can tell you this, it's a big difference having 40% of your underclassmen start and then having your coach back for the second year. You know, Texas has a new coach, some other teams that are way up in that list, you know, Oregon. But, you know, the teams such as Wyoming, Syracuse, Miami of Florida, Auburn, those are the teams that started a lot of freshmen in the first year of a new coaching staff. And now are in their second year. I can tell you last year there was only one team over 55% in underclassmen, and that was the Washington Huskies. And, oh, by the way, they went to the college football playoffs.
All right, let's go over to the NFL side of things here. As I mentioned, win totals out at Westgate, and I'm pretty sure those were actually announced right on SportsCenter. So, you know, I had a talk last week with Kyle Hunter about, you know, the impending legalization of sports betting whenever that does happen, and, you know, how much press it's getting now on the major networks and the pro leagues and all that seem to be, you know, more on board with it. So I think that kind of illustrates it a little bit, that those win total numbers basically released live on air on ESPN. So I know you've had a chance to look at them. You've had a chance to digest some of them. I know that you've already got a best bet, but let's talk in a general sense first here about these win totals. You know, the draft just passed, free agency mostly done. There are still some guys out there, some guys that'll get training camp looks and all that. What do you think about the season win total market overall? Does it look pretty strong to you, or did you find several spots where you had some good opportunities?
Oh, I think there are several spots. Let me preface this by saying NFL win totals, completely different animal than college football win totals. College football win totals, 130 teams. You've got teams ranging from 11.5 down to as little as one. There won't be a one this year. There was a one a couple years ago. So when you're looking at college football, the turnover and the difference from a team from one year to the next can be huge. You don't find that very much in the NFL, and I've said this many times. You know, I would compare the NFL from top to bottom. I would compare it to the SEC West, from Bama down to the last team. You know, that's what I consider the NFL. So people have to remember, even if you lose a couple players, even if you have a great draft, it usually doesn't mean more than a couple of wins. So with that in mind, I like looking at what a team has done the last few years and then make my adjustments. A couple key categories are this. I think the most important category is net yards per game. Everyone looks at a team's record. Everyone looks at their scoring. But when you can move the ball and you have those net yards per game, things usually even out to you. Last year, a quick guess to your listeners, who led the NFL in net yards per game? You might say New England. You'd be wrong. They were plus 59.8. The Arizona Cardinals were 7-8-1. And they were plus 61.6 yards per game. That is indicative of a team that went 13 or 14 wins. When you look back at the history of the NFL, 10 yards per game equals about one win. So if you have an 8-8 team, you would be even in yardage. If you had a 10-6 team, in the history of the NFL, that means they'd be about plus 20 yards per game for the entire season, or plus 320 yards for the entire year. So the Arizona Cardinals plus 61.6 yards per game. One of my teams, I'll look to make a big move. Atlanta actually finished number 6 in the league at plus 44.4. We talked about New England being number 1. The number 2 team was the New Orleans Saints, 7-9 team, and they were plus 50.6 yards per game, outgaining, again, every opponent in a year by 50 yards, more indicative of, again, a 13-win team, yet they finished 7-9. So that's one category I go by, is net yards per game. Another is turnovers. When a team turns the ball over more than 12 times on the year, or they have a 12 difference, meaning if you're plus 8 turnovers, you're minus 20 for a negative 12, teams tend to come back. Turnovers tend to come back to the median, back to zero. But last year, the New York Jets were minus 20 turnovers. That means they lost 1.125 turnovers a game. Jacksonville was minus 16. The Chicago Bears, thanks to Jay Cutler, were minus 20. So those are things I look at. Teams that are minus turnovers to a huge degree, over 0.75 turnovers per game or over 12 on the year, I look for them to recover, to come back to the median. The other category I look for are close wins and close losses. You know, those last second 50-yard field goals, Saints lost to one to, you know, to Oakland. Oakland won many close games like that, were outgained, came back, had close wins. Tennessee was a team. They were plus +3 net wins. You look for them to come back down. The Saints, a team I mentioned, they were minus -3 net close wins. So that means on the year, they had 5 close losses and they had 2 close wins. Again, all those things in the NFL, because of the parity, tend to come back to the median. And then the last thing I look at is what a team has done, what are their expectations, and what is their previous history. There have been 40 teams in the last 12 years in the NFL that have improved or their record has fallen by 6 games. That means Tennessee was 3-13 in 2015. They were 9-7 last year. They picked up 6 wins from the previous year. Arizona was 13-3 in 2013. They fell 6 games, winning 7 games this year. No team of 40 teams that have improved or their record fell by 6 games continued that trend. So Tennessee is an example of one of my plays. They were 3-13. They improved by 6 wins to get to 9 wins. 40 times, no team has ever improved from 9 wins the next year. Their win total this year is 9 wins. They were 3 net wins. Tennessee is a team I certainly look to go under the total. Arizona, a team, again, went from 13 wins down to 7. Their win total is 7.5 this year. But they were number one in the NFL at 61.6 yards per game. I'm going to look for them to go over the total. My best bet, the New York Jets. 10-6 2 years ago, they went down to 5-5. That's only a 5-game difference, but still very strong. They were only minus 13 yards per game. That means a team that was basically 7-9 or 8-8. They were minus 20 turnovers. They were minus 2 net wins. My best bet by far are the Jets over the 5.5 wins, and that number is still currently at 5.5.
Well, one other thing that I want to talk about here with the NFL that you mentioned here in the notes that we discussed before the show, some week one lines are out. You're looking ahead to those, and you know, obviously we talk about the game of the year lines for college football, and I know some guys that have had some massive closing line value with those by being able to get out in front of the market, make that investment, and get a good number on those games. I'm taking it that there's one that you really like in the NFL where you think you're going to get some line value on it here come the month of September.
Well, you know what? Someone had asked me for a best bet on another segment, and looking over the week one lines, it was actually pretty darn easy to back the Cleveland Browns at 9.5. Again, you look at Pittsburgh, you look at what the Browns have done. Pittsburgh has only been a double-digit favorite against the Browns a couple times, and to have a week one line where teams tend to start slow, you have a home dog getting over a touchdown in week one, and in the last 12 years, there have only been 3 dogs of 7.5 or higher week one. All 3 have covered. So this is just a super inflated week one line because Vegas took so much money with everyone betting against the Browns last year. Everyone's thinking the Browns are still going to be horrible, which they are going to be bad, but there's a big difference between bad and horrible. You have a division rival, week one, at home, with a super inflated line. I think the Browns, well, clearly, I mean, it would be potential for a game of the month for me if this line stays this high when the season opens in September.
So last thing I'll ask you about here then in terms of football, what happens from this point forward? I mean, obviously you'll have the college football season win totals coming out here later in the month from Chris Andrews. You'll have different markets opening up some win totals to where maybe you can find some middles or some numbers that you like a little bit more. But what's the rest of the timeline look like here for you in the summer?
You know, it's pretty much just finalizing and tweaking. Right now I'm going through the offensive lines and looking at each team and at how many starters are back and how many how many games the groups have played together. I think the O-line is the most underrated position in college football, and it really is the glue that holds most teams together. And really for the next month, nothing's going to happen. Teams aren't going to practice. They're just working out. And everyone's whole focus is on the free agency market, those graduate transfers that are now picking where they go. There's a handful of quarterbacks out there. We're going to find a few other guys that transfer. And I think you can get value by playing against those teams. You know, for the next month, nothing's going to happen in college football. But when someone transfers, all of a sudden that makes the news cycle because it's the only college football news out there. Besides, some SEC players get arrested, but we won't talk about that. So it really is, you're going to see casual fans, the win totals are going to be out. There's going to be someone that transfers to North Carolina as a graduate transfer quarterback. Their win total is going to be, you know, 6 because Trubisky's been gone because they're in a rebuilding year. And all of a sudden people are going to bet that number to go over because they think one quarterback coming in as a graduate transfer is going to make the difference. Well, Russell Wilson did at Wisconsin and a few others have, but for the most part, they don't make that much of a difference. Those teams get overvalued because of the extra publicity they get. And I certainly look to line up and play against those teams. When we get into spring practice, then you have an entirely different scenario. Because I look at when we get into the August practices, completely different scenario. Because when I look at a team that may have 6 or 7 players back, and all of a sudden a couple freshmen are in the starting lineup, that excites me because those freshmen beat a returning starter on a team that was established. I start upgrading that team because I know they can be better, and then I start tweaking my power ratings again and looking if there's value at over-under win totals because of those scenarios. So, again, dead period for right now, tweaking my numbers, working on some other roster things, but just looking to see where these last few players pan out.
So, Ralph Michaels, as I mentioned, from WagerTalk.com, what's going on over there at the website right now?
Again, you know, the college football win totals are up there. It's a fascinating read. There's not much reading to it. It's just a really one-page reading and 6 pages of charts. But to me, it's phenomenally interesting to see what teams do, how they react, and how Vegas reacts to over-under numbers. I got a daily baseball newsletter starting at Wager Talk. It's a free download. That'll be up by this Friday. And again, that'll have a free play from me daily, and it has a full page matchup for each game every day of the season. Excited, working on the final logistics of that. But a couple things that I look at, it'll break down home favorites, home dogs, average lines, some things that you just can't find in most matchups for situations. So looking forward to that quite a bit.
And you can follow Rolf on Twitter at CalSportsLV. Rolf, great to have you on the show here today. Thank you so much for joining us again, man. Really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again real soon.
Appreciate you having me on, Adam. Have a great rest of May, and go Cavs.
There you go. There's Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com here on our Tuesday Takeover show. Coming up on Wednesday, coming up on Thursday, we'll have another edition of the Bettors Box for you, with some MLB handicapping stuff from myself. But that'll do it for today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again on Thursday.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.